listening to Castrol CarCast on Podcast One.
Hey guys, we got a good CarCast episode for you coming up. We're going to talk about some editing flaws in our series Going Racing with Adam Carolla on Vero. And then we're going to talk about this great new documentary called Framing John DeLorean. It's a wonderful story. Before we get started, let me tell you a little bit about JB Weld. For big or small project repairs at home or the garage, you need something that lasts. We're proud to have JB Weld Epoxy Adhesive as our sponsor. Keep JB Weld in your toolbox, kitchen drawer, and craft room. It's good for metal, wood, plastic, and more, pretty much anything. It's made in the USA. Pros and DIYers have trusted JB Weld for more than 50 years. We use it here at home and in the garage and in the studio and the shop over there, pretty much everywhere. We've got it stored everywhere. It's available at jbweld.com. It's at Home Depot, Lowe's, AutoZone, Advanced Auto Parts, O'Reilly, Walmart, Amazon, and more. JB Weld, the world's strongest bond.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. The church better get on mandate. Get it on. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for telling a friend. It's CarCast. I'm Adam Carolla. That's Matt, the moderator, DeAndrea, over there. We got an interesting guest.
Yeah.
Tamir Ardon is coming in here. He made a documentary called Framing John DeLorean, which I watched.
I did as well.
Very innovative, yeah. Very interesting. DeLorean's a very interesting character.
Great story.
And not only that, but Alec Baldwin stars in his DeLorean doc as John DeLorean. So it's a very interesting story with prosthetics and a sort of behind the scenes. It's very... It breaks down a lot of convention that normal docs have. Sit down, interview, stock photos, and things like this.
Some reenactments.
But this is a reenactment in a reenactment on a reenactment.
it's like a documentary of the reenactment.
You have like Baldwin sitting in the makeup chair, getting the prosthetic chin put on and everything else. So a very interesting watch.
Yeah.
And you do not have to be a car person to enjoy it. But if you're listening, you probably are a car person. CarCast brought to you by Castrol Oil. Thank them for that. And Zycote brought to you as well by Zycote. Better engine performance, horsepower, fuel economy, lower underhood temperatures. Zybar, the ultra-thin temperature coating, reduces radiant heat by 90%. Put Zybar on, take heat off. You can learn more at Zycote.com. And also... let's see. What do we got here? All right. So we'll bring our guest in a moment. He drove a 91 NSX over here as well, which is nice. I've always liked those cars.
I saw him on the road this morning leaving the West Side, and I was like, it's for some reason, every time I see somebody like on the road in a cool car at that time in the morning, I'm like, that's got to be our guest. And like I saw it with Spike Ferriston. He came in for the first time, and I was like, "Who's this guy driving this Porsche?" It's like, this Porsche is kind of older and looks kind of cool. And I was like, "It's got to be him." And sure enough, the whole time here we're just following each other.
Well, you know, the thing I like about especially the first gen NSX, but any NSX, I feel the same way about like when I would see somebody in an Audi S8. Like from the late 90s or the early 2000s. And I'd go, well, that guy's got some money, but so does the guy in the BMW 7 Series or the Mercedes 6.3, whatever. I don't even know all the Mercedes designations. But that guy thinks a little bit differently.
Yeah.
Because the Audi S8 at the time was just a cooler. They probably didn't sell near as many units as BMW or Mercedes did, but there was something cool about them. And you want, that guy's discerning. Like, that guy knows cars. The other people are rich guys who are driving a nice car, but this guy's a rich guy who knows something about cars. I feel that way with the NSX.
Yeah. And when you mention S8, I immediately think Ronin.
Yes.
The movie, right?
Yeah.
De Niro. And by the way, great sounds in that movie. Great engine sounds.
Nate wants to put generic guitar
That's what it was missing.
And then the drums kick in.
That's what it was missing. I don't even think there was any... I don't think, now that you mentioned it, I don't know if there was music during those scenes.
Learned from watching the show, the movie Rendezvous, you need lots of generic guitar. Otherwise, it gives you the illusion of speed.
Yeah. I remember when he was specking out the car in that movie, he wanted a nitrous kit.
Oh, really?
Yeah. You know, it's like kind of the chubby driver guy. And he's like, we need to, yeah, I forgot what he said.
Well, as long as
we were
complaining. You can watch Adam Carolla Goes Racing at Vero, but Max Zapata does have the clip I was complaining to you about, which is the, I have notes.
Yes.
And
we were talking about them on the last night.
And my notes for people who do things, Max Zapata's had a few of these notes, which is make it better. Make it better. And I've had to tell people like all the time, like, don't use that. The race hasn't started yet. You're putting in stuff for when we're going slow, or you got to put a little head on it so we know where we're at, or have them shift, or have the sound of the engine loud so you can hear it. So, like, here's the deal. Here's what we're attempting to do with the editing process. You listening, Max Pana?
I don't like how you're putting me in this category.
We are trying to take things and make them better.
Yeah, that's
the
fine.
Editing process.
Yeah.
So with jokes, you
Seems
have to have
easy.
A little head at the front, a little tail in the rear. It's a little pace, a little timing.
Yeah.
When you're doing a visual part, you don't take chitty chitty bang bang cars that are beige from the 30s with wooden wheels. You take cool Ferrari GTOs.
Yeah, when it's a racing event.
When you're doing a in-car footage, you crank up the engine sound and you make this action around you exciting. But you try to keep the generic rock music over the guitars off or down, and you try not to use footage from warm-up laps from before the race in the body of the actual race. Sometimes there'll be stuff of just pulling onto the track. Like, I'll see footage of me pulling onto the track. I'll go, the race hasn't started. I'm pulling out of the pit. Oh, that's what we got footage of the car. So
I'm insulted I'm in this category.
You've elevated your game. These were earlier conversations we had. But I don't know. Like, I would say to Max Zapata, who has used a phrase, the shoot around, like, I've had people edit boxing clips, I've had them do car clips and stuff, and I go, just get all the good, exciting, fast, and then they show you the thing and you go, what happened to the big five punch combo? And they go, I could put that in there. And it's like, okay, yeah, because you're showing the part where the guy's pulling the mouthpiece out of my mouth and I'm sitting down. But we want that. And they go, I'll put that in.
Yeah.
And I go, okay, but why? Just to you. But I mean, Max Pata knows basketball, and just look at it as a highlight reel.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Like Zion, is it Williams? What's his last name?
I always call him Zion.
Just Zion. They go, like, that guy's going to be the first draft. And then they do what ESPN does, 20 seconds, and it's just him in the air, just mashing the ball.
Extended.
Right.
Down with it.
Right. All right. So now the thing that's funny about this, and you can go to Vero. You can go to Vero.com.
.co. But .co. You want to download the app on your phone.
Download the app and watch Adam Carolla Goes Racing, because the cars are bitching, and it's something you'll never see. No one covers it on all the shitty... All those shit car shows they put all over the fucking TV. They never show any good cars or any vintage racing or anything. It's just seeing the cars in my race are crazy.
Yeah, it's a great group.
But you can see the in-race footage, which is, we'll run it for you, and then we'll
let's
have
take a look.
Full bonsai
stupid
on
Sunoco car.
Oh, yeah.
Guy's a nut.
That guy flew in. Grabbed a shift, but I don't know what happened. I don't know if my hand hit the ignition or something, but the car lost power. Then everybody went around me. Then I pulled off. Then I tried to get it started again. I think the ignition switch was down. I put the ignition switch up. I restarted the car.
Got into the race.
And got back into it, but I was right in the middle of it, and then I was like, not right in the middle of it.
Watch
but
this
it was good.
Wheel
I had
work.
A good race with a BMW CSL. The guy was going good, kind of behind me. And
literally, as you said the word race, you're going.
It's a warm up lap.
Yeah.
Don't use footage from the warm up lap in the race. That's my. It's a pretty. I don't have a lot of requests. There's 10 laps. There's one warm up, and they're always. You always can tell because all the cars in front. of me and me on straightaways are going back and forth sawing at the wheel. But also you can tell because the engine isn't being revved. I'm on a straightaway and I'm not revving the engine.
Yeah.
Okay.
Except for the Sunoco guy. He's always racing.
So whether you're a car guy or not, or basketball guy or not, just get Zion dunking.
Yeah.
Don't get him during the shoot around.
Not the sitting on the bench with the towel around his neck. We need to get one of those aircraft style, that red switch protector. You know, you got to flip
We flipped the switch over, whatever it is, and we did do the switch, and that was just me. I didn't know what I was doing. I think what I was doing was I wanted to like go like what the fuck
with hand
up right hand, and I just went like what, and then I like started to grab for the stick shift in between my Italian what the fuck and my I got to grab a gear here and I just kind of like spazzed.
And you don't notice with the gloves on and everything and the vibration and the noise, like you wouldn't know.
Anyway,
so we moved the switch.
We took the switch and we turned it over or something so that if your hand hit it up, it wouldn't go up or down. It was in a space where whatever the direction it was, it would be much harder to do it now that we flipped it over.
Yeah,
We worked on it. Also, I can work on not spazzing out in the car.
Well, you wouldn't even think that like hitting the switch would be one of the things, but now it's going to be like on your brain. Like now you're going to think,
no,
if something happened, you'd be like, check this switch. Any of the switches and the lights.
I'm good in that once I make a mistake like that, I won't make that mistake again. Like I won't go near that thing. But it is close to the gear shift.
It is.
Knob.
Yeah.
And it could happen. Yeah. Anyway, stupid. But let's not use warm-up lap footage in the body of the race. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
Goes without saying, but it has been discussed a number of times. There's an interior version and an exterior version. They like the outside version where the cars are just weaving around going half speed.
Right. Okay. Very much warm up.
All right. And I say all the time, get the engine going because that's the real feel. And during the warm up laps, you're not redlining the engine.
Yeah, you'll hear the difference in the laps. I mean,
one would think. One would assume. If you're going down a straightaway and the engine isn't revving.
Yeah.
That means we're on a warm-up lap.
Maybe. Well, it's a good thing this is the first time they've ever edited. Wait a minute.
Talk about it all the time.
I get 5 years into it.
All right. Let's see. Shall we bring Tamir in?
Before we do that, Adam, so Alec Baldwin, we were talking about him earlier. He just did an interview. You're going to like this. He did it with Tucson's newspaper, and they asked him about the match game returning. And he's talking about his wife and how she's going to make an appearance. And he's like, oh, well, how'd you convince her? And I said, well, I told her she's going to be here with some of the greats of comedy in the last 25 to 30 years.
Oh, if they said my name.
You know, Caroline Rhea, Adam Carolla, Kenan Thompson, Horatio Sanz.
Wow. So, nice. It's Caroline Ray, by the way.
Oh, Ray, sorry.
She's probably, I know who spells she is. Probably spells it in a weird way.
R-H-E-A.
Yeah, that is weird. You'd have to know.
Weird.
All right. What's that bitch doing in front of me? Come on, Baldwin.
Ladies first.
Ladies first. All right. Let's see. Why don't we get Tamir going up in here? You want me to hit Zybar?
Yes.
I'll hit Zybar. We're using Zybar, man.
Yeah.
We're using it on the 935 brake ducting.
Did you see that?
I did, yeah. It looks good.
Sean laid it down with the gun and everything, and it's a nice finish. It's a terrible piece of metal, but it's a really nice finish.
Yeah, we're taking apart my 935, and we're redoing the brake ducting. And, you know, because during those warm-up laps, those brake calipers take a beating, man.
According to the video.
So we got the Zycode out. Zybar, man. Heat is the enemy, and this stuff is bulletproof, and it scrubs off that heat. So, like, if you're doing headers, you don't have to wrap it with that weird fire hose-looking stuff.
Yeah.
It increases horsepower and torque, reduces metal surface underhood temperatures. And for your listeners, or our listeners that aren't DIYers, because, yeah, he had to mix that stuff up and put it in a gun and shoot it. You can send your parts in, at Zycoat.com and click on the coding services. I think it was 15 days it takes, which is a fast turnaround.
I just talked to him. He said 2 weeks, and he's beating that on pretty much every order.
So you send in your headers, intake manifold, or if you're going to do your turbo, take it apart and send in your shells and whatever, and they will pick your color, and they'll do it in-house and send it back to you. So check that out.
Anywhere in the world, by the way.
Wow.
Maybe not the 2 week part, but the turnaround, but
Zycoat.com. So, Tamir, good to see you, my friend.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
We make documentaries. We like cars.
NSX.
We're like John DeLorean.
you're sold right before you even walked in.
I really enjoyed it. It's a very enjoyable movie.
Thank you.
DeLorean's iconic, very interesting story. His life is wildly fascinating. One of the first things they say in the doc is how many movies have been, I don't know if the right word is option, but how many times it's been discussed
sort
to make a
attempted
movie of this guy's life. In a way, he would be the Freddie Mercury of the automotive world. But they've never made a feature. Is that correct?
Correct. Yeah. I mean, that was one of the things. So I had actually been one of those competing projects back in 2009 when there was a flurry of them. So there was my project. There was one with Brett Ratner. There was one with a guy named David Permit. And another guy named Andy Trapani. And what was interesting about it was each project had its own version of John in terms of the fact that they had different intellectual property, different family members attached, and each one proclaimed to be telling the true story, the real story of John DeLorean. So when I circled back with my directors on this in 2015 and we were discussing fresh ways of approaching this rather than doing just a traditional doc, we thought, well, you know, maybe cracking the John DeLorean story is going to be the best way, doing it through these various competing projects as the launching off point. Like, why is this man's story so hard to tell? Why hasn't anyone been able to accomplish it in the last 35 years? And so that was really the sort of starting off, jumping off point for us.
Obviously, came up with the DeLorean, was with GM, sort of took Pontiac to the performance world with the GTO, was a guy who, back in a day with sort of, you know, those old pictures you see it like sometimes at the hardware store or at the car dealership from the 50s where everyone's got the same horn rim glasses and skinny ties. There's white guys with the Brill Cream in their hair and stuff. He was the young mod, like fresh, good looking dude with the swagger.
Yeah, and a playboy.
Yeah, and he was sort of poised. You know, he was on the short list of guys who are going to take over GM, like the biggest company in the world, and he broke it off and wanted to do his own thing.
Yeah, I mean, he was sort of, you know, definitely going in a different direction than most of the people back then. I mean, he, you know, wore the clothes that they didn't want him to wear. He was dating the people that they didn't want him to date. And so from that standpoint, he was sort of a maverick. And, you know, he crossed hairs with GM just one too many times, and that's when they finally had to separate.
Do you think
kind of a marketing genius, right? That was
100%. I mean, I think that's one thing that a lot of people don't realize is he created product placement before the term even existed. So
yeah,
he was sort of a
Vince McMahon before 100%, you know, in a different world.
100%. He was giving away these free cars to all these Hollywood shows in the 60s, and the GM brass is saying, "What the hell are you giving away thousands of dollars worth of free cars?" And he said, "Well, they're putting it on their TV shows, and then we're selling all these other cars because of it." And they really couldn't grasp that whole aspect to it.
Do you think that and you know, and those automotive manufacturers in Detroit and that time period, they didn't have the crazy competition with all the Datsuns and Toyotas and Hondas and everything that were pouring in. So they weren't like as lean and mean. Like they weren't thinking, they're like, they're fat cats. We got a monopoly. Mm-hmm. Everyone's rich. What are we giving cars away for? Like they weren't thinking in an innovative fashion and looking down the road because they were like alpha predator. There was no Japanese cars, no anything was coming at, no imports, no anything.
Yeah.
The show is the movie, which is Framing John DeLorean, and it's available as we speak on video on demand and in select theaters. It's a very fascinating tale, and of course, having Alec Baldwin in it as DeLorean and pulling it off, you know, they don't look alike, but with prosthetics and whatnot, he did. Very interesting. So how did we get Baldwin into this project?
Yeah, it's I mean, it's one of those things where when you look back on it now, it was just meant to be. So the Alec Baldwin was a fan of my director's previous movie, The Art of the Steal, which is also where I connected with them back in 2009. They did this incredible documentary. And at that point, I decided I really wanted to work with them to be the directors on the project. And so when we started out on this, we had the concept of doing both the reenactments as well as possibly shooting the reenactments. But we didn't actually approach Alec until about a year and a half into the production. We shot the entire documentary and put that together and then figured out which parts would best be served having these reenactment scenes. When we approached him, he was interested, and when we first got on a phone call with him, he told us the crazy story about how John DeLorean called him a few months before he died in 2004 to ask him if he would portray him in a film that John at that point was developing with another producer. And our jaws just about dropped when we heard this because we had no idea that was the case. And you know, for Alec, he really wanted to make sure, you know, this was coming off the popularity of his Trump impersonation or sort of parody on Saturday Night Live. And he really wanted to approach it as a serious role. He didn't want it to feel like a parody. So for him, it was really, can I pull off the look in a way that's going to be convincing? And even he self-admits, I'm not as tall as John, I'm not as lean as John. But if he could at least pull off the look with the prosthetics and the wig, then he'd be comfortable doing it. And fortunately, we did a few test runs at Saturday Night Live, and just with some of the current prosthetics and wigs they had, not even the custom one, he saw it, and I saw the twinkle in his eye at one point, and I knew, okay, he's gonna do this with us.
DeLorean had some plastic surgery. He had his chin, enhanced or something.
Oh yeah, I mean that's what makes him so fascinating. Is he is a character in himself in terms of the fact that he saw that he needed to brand himself in the late 60s and 70s, which meant he was working out. He had the chin implant. You know, he would dye his hair, you know, eyebrows. He had a little bit of a nose job. I mean, he constantly tanning himself.
Yeah,
it was a fascinating
character.
It looked
like in some of the footage, you can kind of see the before and after. You can see like an early image of DeLorean without the chin and everything.
Right.
And you're like, who is this young man? And then you see him older, like, where did he grow that chin?
Yeah.
It's kind of interesting.
Normally.
But then when you guys clarify it in the film, I'm like, oh, that's...
Yeah.
You kind of have to because you're like, it's not the same person.
I know. It's crazy.
Do we look at... So I was kind of thinking about John DeLorean, and I saw the film, your film... it must have been a couple of weeks ago. So it was on my mind, and a good doc works that way. You start thinking about the story, and you kind of sometimes you'll do a dive like, ooh, I want to look into Ayrton Senna. Who's that guy? Proust? Who's the guy he was racing as teammate, whatever? And you start taking this, you go on the internet, and you want to learn more about who these guys are, and that's what a good doc does. So I was in here, and it was like on my mind, and I was talking to Dr. Drew about it. And I have this theory that most people are not good and bad. They're sort of weak. And the reason there's a bunch of construction material dumped on the street behind this warehouse is not because the guys who dumped it are bad. It's because the guys who dumped it are poor and they don't want to pay $100 and take it to the dump in Sunland. So they dump it here. But it's not because they're criminals. It's because it's free and they don't have money. And the reason... there's no soda cans in the pile of junk that's dumped over there because soda cans are worth a nickel a piece. So when the guys are dumping the back of their pickup truck at midnight on Tuesday night on this back street, they're not dumping the soda cans. So are they into recycling? Are they into the environment? Are they good people? Are they bad people? Yeah. No, they're just weak. And when you're weak, you then get pushed into things that are bad because most people don't have that kind of constitution. So DeLorean, I never thought of as a bad guy, but he was a guy who got himself into trouble. He was like over leveraged with his car company. He needed an influx of cash, and somebody told him you can make it fast by selling drugs. And I don't think of him as a drug dealer or even a criminal. And you have to also think to yourself, like, what would you do? Like, what if you were really strapped for cash, you needed millions of dollars, and somebody just went, I can get that for you fast. It's going to take a couple of meetings. Like, who amongst us would go, no, drugs are wrong, I'm not going to get involved with that? Or who wouldn't say, tell me more? And I feel that's kind of him, but is your assessment that assessment, or is there something I don't know?
No, I think you're spot on. I mean, listen, the title of the film, Framing John DeLorean, is a double entendre, obviously. We're trying to frame his life through the lens of different individuals and people that knew him, and sort of let the audience decide at the end how they want to come off, you know, feeling about him as a person. And a lot of that is very mixed in terms of the good. You know, you look at his kids and the way they see him. You look at the previous business partners, some of which he screwed in very, you know, bad ways. Bill Collins, the one that created the GTO, and then subsequently created the prototype, but then he shuttled him to go over with Colin Chapman at Lotus. So you see those moves. And then in terms of the drug bust, you know, he clearly, the sting was a frame job from the standpoint that they were pushing him into doing this when he really would never have on his own come up with this idea. But there was that element of John where he was always looking for that easy way out. And you can see that through other episodes earlier in his life. And with this one, you know, he never thought he was going to have to sell drugs on the street. He thought it was coming through a legitimate bank. And we break down for the first time. There's a lot of interviews in this doc that with people that have never spoken publicly before, including the undercover D agent, other undercover FBI agent, who are in those black and white grainy surveillance footage things. And you get a sense his character is definitely on the morally corrupt side once in a while, but you get a sense it's a little bit like this Robin Hood style mentality where he's thinking that at the end of the day, I'm doing this for the Belfast workers, I'm doing this for my own gain, and it's a little muddled.
I agree, but except he still seems like he has this gene. He's got this skewed moral compass a little bit because
100%. Yeah,
because you know the drug bust thing. Yeah, that was a big portion of the film, and it was potentially a frame job of whatever. And you're right; his motivations could have been. As you're watching it, you're like, oh, his motivations are because of all the thousands of people that work there. And then we get a little further in the film. We're like, also, he did the Colin Chapman thing and then stole $17 million and pocketed $9 million. Well, and you're like, well, yeah, because you kind of got that in you. Like, he's got a little bit of that in him. And that's why he wouldn't back away from, you know, like what seemed like an easy drug deal. Just like a little bit of something there.
I may be tipping my hand morally. But, I mean, honestly, like if you were saying, like, I'm going to start a company. I'm going to raise a bunch of money and I'm going to start my own whatever company. And you raise $17 million and then you went to Indiana and they're like, oh, no, we'll give you the $17 million. We'll build the factory. Yeah. And you were like, oh, okay. I feel like I got $17 million. It's mine now. And I'm trying to think of who. Now, everyone would try to figure out a way to keep the 17. A small group of people would go, I have to give everyone their money back. A larger group of people would go, I got to figure out a way for no one to know I have this money. Yeah. Like, it's probably a slightly larger group of people who would go into. So what I'm saying is I think most human beings, and especially now, not my mom, but business people would go, oh, I just raised $17 million and now these guys are going to pay for the factory. How can I figure out a way to keep this $17 million? Now, some people would go, how do I figure out a way to legitimately keep this $17 million?
How do you treasure chest that?
Or how do I keep half of it legitimately? Or how do I, whatever, which is what most business people do. But a large group would go, how do I do it and not have anyone find out? And probably the minority would be, give the money back to everyone who gave it to me.
Right. But it doesn't have to be the give the money back. There's the legit conversation of, we've got this. Let's treasure chest this. Maybe we can bonus out the executives.
The thing that was interesting is the Colin Chapman part.
Yeah.
Because that guy was always just the Lotus guy, and he was nobility in the race world. And I never heard any scuttlebutt about Colin Chapman, and he passed before this went down, I guess. But how did that play out?
Yeah, no, the Colin Chapman thing, I mean, a movie could be done on him.
Yeah, where's his half of the 17?
Well, it's funny. So we interviewed 55 people for the film, which for me is a, you know, I'm coming at this project as a producer, but I'm also a DeLorean historian in terms of the fact that I've spent my life dedicated to learning about the car, the history of the man. That's how I befriended him late in his life and his kids.
Drives an NSX, by the way.
Well, and there's a tangential connection.
Mid-engine.
Because it runs.
No, also John DeLorean owned two NSXs.
Oh, really?
I had extensive conversations with him. I've got a picture in front of his big estate when I went out to see him the first time, and he's, you know, it's in front of his yellow NSX in front of his big house, which is coincidentally now the Trump National Golf Course, which is the clubhouse, which is strange in itself. But yeah, I mean, going back to what we were saying before, I mean, there's
looking at the picture.
Oh, yeah, that's great. Yeah, so there's the picture of me and John and. So now you can see why I had Alec dressed in that same shirt for that last shot, shot in the movie.
So Colin Chapman, starts Lotus, right?
Colin Chapman is the founder of Lotus. Now, what I was going to say was interesting about the interviews we did. So there are only 25 interviews that ended up making in the film. One of the interviews that I did was with Giorgetto Giugiaro, obviously one of the famous car designers of Italo Design, and he's the one that penned the design of the Lotus Esprit as well as the DeLorean. And one of the first questions he asked me when I was in Italy interviewing
him. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah. I was going to say the first-gen Esprit is very DeLorean-looking. Yeah,
absolutely. That sort of slabby 70s wedge design.
Yep.
He also designed the BMW M1. So he has that sort of
aesthetic.
That makes sense.
His aesthetic.
So he's got one look.
That was his aesthetic at that time, but he's done a lot of stuff. Brilliant man. But one of the questions he asked me was, where have you interviewed Chapman? And I said, "Come on, are you serious?" He's like, "Well, you know, he's in South America," and so there's a rumor out there which I've known about as well, and there's a conspiracy theory that he faked his death, and he went to South America and lived out the rest of his years off of this embezzled money. And there's a lot of people because nobody ever saw the body. His wife was with him, and she says he died, and it was on a plane. There's a lot of strange things that circle this, and the fact that somebody like Giorgetto Giugiaro is even possibly thinking this is pretty amazing.
What year would – mid-80s?
What year did he die?
He died literally a month after the drug bust, so end of 82.
The 9 million goes as far as you think it does from 82
to
now.
It does in South America. So here's the thing. It's interesting because I was like, what happened to Chapman? Yeah. And I don't remember a lot of fanfare around his death or even knowing if he was alive or dead. And, you know, we're in an analog time. I mean, in the 82, it was about, we're getting to the end of you faking your death or like being lost at sea, but it was pretty doable back then. And 9 million in that part of the world would keep you going.
Yeah.
And that's an interesting thought. I poo-poo every conspiracy theory, but the Colin Chapman boys from Brazil sort of thought,
and
maybe.
Who's the Porsche guy that recently died or disappeared? Was it Andial?
There was a Porsche guy recently disappeared?
Yeah. Like within the past few years, I think.
And he's like,
Or Gambala? Was it the Gambala guy? Gambala Porsche?
I don't know. You're going to have to find out. But we can't. It's tough because I think Olivia Newton-John tried it with her boyfriend like on a fishing boat or something a few years ago.
That one's already been done.
And it doesn't. It's just
the
hard.
It's been done.
It's harder to do because everyone has like a
gimmick.
Everyone has like a Ring doorbell with a camera in it and shit. You just can't really get away with the shit that you want to get away with anymore.
The UPS guy can't even show up without being on camera.
Yeah, I know, but it's weird. Like, you can't, like, they go, in Brooklyn, there's a Hasidic Jew walking down the street, and a guy came up behind him and whacked him in the head, and they're like, all right, let's take a look. Like, there's a camera. Like, you just can't punch a Jew anymore. No. What's this world coming to? Do I want to raise my son in a nation where he can't punch to Hasidim and go home and sleep like a baby without fear of reparation? Is that what you're saying?
I don't want to live in that world.
You don't want to live in that world. So, 82, I think this is believable. And I was like, And Chapman was also like nobility, right?
Yeah, he was. I mean, listen, he had a chip on his shoulder because, and we don't get into any of this in the film, but it's parts that I find to be fascinating. He had a chip on his shoulder because he needed money from the British government to keep Lotus going. They were always sort of on the brink of
right.
Still are.
Yeah, there's still. I mean, he was spending a lot of his time and money on the racing circuit and less on the production of the cars, the hand built cars. And so he asked for about $20 million from the British government, and they had denied him. And then literally a week later is when they released that they were giving $140 million to this American John DeLorean to build his sports car in Belfast. So he was quite ticked because of that. And you know, the fact that they came together to productionize the car was sort of, you know, the perfect scenario of Colin being able to potentially sort of shove it to the British government. And that's, I think that's even more reason why they put together this whole GPD scam to embezzle this money.
Well, I'll tell you, Matt, why don't you hit your spot? Yeah. I'm going to tease this. I just put in the finishing touches on a Shelby dock. And in a way, Chapman is sort of the British Shelby to some degree. I mean, there's some parallels there, but that would be a good subject for a doc if you make car-related docs like I do. So we should talk. Give a shout-out.
Yeah, we'll tell you guys about Castrol Edge. Castrol Edge is stronger under pressure. Engines can lose up to 10% of performance due to friction, and Castrol Edge with fluid titanium transforms under pressure to keep metal apart and fight power-robbing friction to unlock exhilarating performance. It's three times stronger.
Three times, fool!
Than the leading full synthetic against viscosity breakdown per the Kurt Orban test and the 5W30 VIS grade. Edge formula always exceeded the toughest industry standards, but the new and improved formula incorporates the latest technology that makes it transform to be the strongest when pressure is highest.
Yeah, Chapman had that cool little mustache, right?
Yeah, yeah. No, he was kind of a
I don't trust you mustache.
But he had a little flair. I mean, he had that same sort of Shelby. Like Shelby was racer, builder,
marketer,
businessman. You know, ladies' man. Like he had a lot of DeLorean, Chapman, Shelby. They had a lot of the same going, which is like it wouldn't really matter how good a builder you were if you didn't have that salesman swagger. How are you going to get it off the ground?
Yeah, and for Chapman, he was less, I think, sales than John ever was. He was really obsessed with the racing of it all, and a brilliant engineer. And John was just kind of in awe of him, which is kind of funny to see because everyone would always be tripping over John to sort of talk about how amazing of an engineer he was and all this stuff. And you know, he had great admiration for Colin even after his death and all the scandal. And you know, you look at what Colin did. I mean, the idea of just lowering the weight ratio of the car is not having to necessarily put the fastest, biggest engines in them, you know, but just making them as light as possible so that they could really zip around. And that was, you know, they still have that that aspect to them even today. But yeah, he was a brilliant engineer. He had a little bit of a chip and shady streak, which aligned quite nicely with John at the perfect timing.
There was a, you know, you've arrived because he did the DeLorean suspension. He did suspension for an Isuzu, like Impulse or something too. There was like Isuzu made like a sports car,
and then the Lotus Elan was the Isuzu powered front wheel drive little convertible.
That's a front wheel drive car
in the 90s.
So it was like 80s Isuzu. I don't know, was it called an Impulse? And it said like suspension by Lotus. I don't know.
There was a lot of like engineering partnerships, and still like to this day, there's so many cars that are based on that. And that actually,
how about the greatest marriage ever, AMC and Renault, to create the Renault Alliance, the greatest automobile. We took the greatest manufacturer of automobiles from the United States and paired them with the greatest.
And called it the Alliance.
The two of the greatest, and we called it the Alliance to create the greatest automobile, road going automobile ever created. Because when you take the best Renault and the best AMC, you put them together. Come on.
Yeah. Powerhouse.
Yeah. Next time, I don't know, take Ford and put them together with Mercedes or something.
Right.
But
we've got an Aston Martin AMG mashup.
Well, that's true.
I watch your documentary and I see how much of that is.
Oh, the Impulse. Sorry. Handling by Lotus is what it would say.
Handling by Lotus.
There it is.
Yeah.
It was actually, I'm sure it was utterly gutless, but in the world of late 80s kind of cars, like a Mitsubishi Starion or something like that, it was okay, right?
Looks like a Jajaro design as well.
Yeah,
pretty slammy and wedgy.
Yeah. All right.
I like it.
Probably Max Pata. I found your next ride.
All right.
You could pick one of those up on eBay like for well under $2,500.
I bet it's surprisingly fuel efficient.
Yeah, because it doesn't run.
Because it doesn't run. I like the NACA scoop on the front of that thing. I watched the documentary and I'm seeing how much of this is over time becomes more and more fueled by ego as well.
Sure.
When you get that success at GM and he's like, I could get paid $500,000 a year. I can get paid $750,000 a year, or I can do my own thing. And why shouldn't I do my own thing? And you know, and the vanity, the ego for the whole thing. And I'm like, I kind of feel like in 10 years from now, you can repurpose your film as the Tesla story because
I knew that's where you're going. Yeah, it's so true. I mean, the Elon Musk comparison to John, which he, by the way, hates being compared to John DeLorean.
Of course.
But I mean, how can you not be compared? I mean, the models of the two companies are completely in sync. You know, John wanted to start with this ethical sports car, a car that wouldn't rust, made out of stainless steel, have good gas mileage, but also be a performance sexy car. You know, Musk and Tesla wanted to make a car that's great for the environment, that would also be very safe and have all these innovative features. And they both knew that starting with a sports car was the only way to do it, to get a lot of attention.
Which was a Lotus.
Which was based off of a Lotus chassis. Yeah. So there's even more, you know, synergy connection there. And then, of course, come out with sedans, which for the DeLorean, they already had a four-door, you know, ready to go. It was going to be another year of production that would... Yeah, they were ready to do... I mean, he knew he couldn't support a mass production car on just one model. So he was ready to do the four-door, then eventually something else. And, you know, with Musk, of course, he came out with the Model S and then the X. And so he's reached a certain success that John never was able to get to based on the deep wallets of people investing.
Well, the economies of scale have changed, but not much else has.
No, and you know, his story is still being written.
I mean, there's government money, and there's, you know, you build a gigafactory in so-and-so place because, you know, that state or whatever's going, we got tax breaks, we got millions.
I was talking to Drew, I don't know why, about the flying wing and Northrop, and the idea of the flying wing was a good idea, and it was there, but you couldn't do it with cables controlling everything. You need a computer and a fly-by-wire. You know, you needed that technology. So the idea is there. The idea is good, but it's before its time. Like, it can't be done. At some point, you need a computer to make that thing fly. And I feel like Elon is benefiting by having a computer. I mean, DeLorean didn't have a computer. Everything was analog he had to do. And I don't know if that's helpful or hurtful, but I feel like it's easier
The technology
now.
And the engineering is leaps and bounds different.
What I'm saying is to do a bespoke anything is just easier now than it was when everything was just analog and mechanical, right?
Yeah,
sure. No, absolutely. And for John, you know, he had to rely on a lot of existing technology to get that car built in the time frame that he needed to build it. So, you know, going with the PRV engine, by the way, is, you know, often criticized, but it was the only route he had to be able to actually get the cars made.
Was that an Opel?
It was the Peugeot-Renault-Volvo engine that they were sharing.
What about
the
Alliance?
You know, but Tesla started that way too with the Lotus platform and the Roadster. They had to rely on a lot of existing technology.
Absolutely.
He was going to be an electric drivetrain company, basically. I'm going to be the battery and drivetrain company, and I'm going to sell it to Mercedes. I'm going to sell it to Toyota, and I'm going to do that. And then things evolve.
Yeah, he was able to make his own.
We need the Tesla Alliance.
Matt's not I don't think he's a fan. Well, of Elon. What I'm saying is I think everyone else gets pumped up about it, and he sort of sees a company that's not doing as well as what people are saying.
Yeah. And it's also not about the product. I'm a fan of what they're trying to do, and they started an entire movement within the automotive world. Every car company has their electric vehicles that are coming out, Porsche and Audi and Jaguar and everybody. Like, he's innovated, really made mainstream electric vehicles. But behind the scenes, it's a kind of a mess.
It's not profitable.
People can't pay the bills. And it's just like, but you've got the billionaire tycoon sitting at the top. And it kind of is like, well, how much is he putting into the company? What's he doing?
Yeah.
You know?
No, it's a compelling story, and it's one that doesn't have an ending yet. But I think as long as it doesn't end in a hotel room with a suitcase of cocaine.
Like, I don't want it to go there, but there's a version of that. There's a lot of, hey, I've got a Model 3. It's out there. We're making them. I can't afford to make it. So I'm going to announce a pickup truck, and I'm going to take $250 million in deposits on a truck that doesn't exist.
Yeah.
So I can pay for the car that I should be making. Like, there's a lot of, you know,
well,
like,
there's a lot of chucking and jiving going on behind the
scenes.
Not
a lot of car
there.
Companies doing that. Also, getting away with, like, we're going to start testing with real people and kill them. Like, name any other industry in the world. There's a pharmaceutical company going, hey, I've got a new painkiller.
You get to test with real people?
All the self-driving stuff. He's just testing with real people.
Oh, I see. I thought you meant crash testing. Well, maybe.
No, there's a version of that. Crash testing legally with the government is like a $5 million test. Yeah. So why not do it on the 405?
Well, the thing that pisses me off is when he was unveiling his new hypercar, the Roadster, the new next gen.
Yeah, and it looks like badass. And the
0 to 60 in like 1.9 seconds and 250 miles an hour. It can't go that fast. It can't. Not on a battery. And I think, I don't know, was it Leno's Garage?
Yeah, they had the prototype over there.
But I think they were announcing 250 or over 200 miles an hour. And I was like, no fucking way. This guy's P.T. Barnum. Don't repeat that. Or go do it.
You've got to be able to back it up. You got the car.
Go over 200 miles an hour.
That's the point. It's like your computer model said in theory it'll do that much, but jeez.
And that is a similarity with John. I mean, he would say outlandish things, and the people behind the scenes would be like, "Oh, John, please don't say that. We don't know if we can actually back that up." You know,
Max Zapata, what was the new Tesla Roadster claim? I think it was over 200. I don't know if it was 250, but get the fuck out of here.
It's a lot.
Or go do 250 and then come back and tell us.
I'll tell you what. Look that up real quick. I'll tell you guys about Geico. Everybody's got a to-do list. You drop off your dry cleaning. You pick up some milk. And now you can save hundreds of dollars on car insurance to that list, and you don't have to drop off or pick up anything. Just go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes, you could be saving 15% or more on car insurance. So if you want some extra money in your pocket, this is the most rewarding to-do you can do today. Be sure to go to geico.com.
Now, it is $250.
It is $250, right on the Tesla website.
But now, here's the thing. The 1.9... I'm sure they've vetted that, or I'm sure they've done a 0 to 60 test. Where's your 250 test?
And plus 20-mile range, And 620-mile. Look, I look at that, and I'm like, that's awesome. I would love to see that.
Oh, yeah, with a 600-mile range, right.
Yeah, it's like, but is it going to happen?
Mm.
It runs 880s in the quarter mile, according to their... Like, they can test that, right? Can't we just cut out the auto club speedway and just do it?
They can test everything if they want. It goes over 250 miles an hour.
But you're right. That's the hype. Like, I'd put a deposit down on that if they can do that. But I want it back when it doesn't go 250.
Well, I'm not saying they haven't, but I'm saying if they did, I think we'd know it. There'd be some footage. There'd be a GoPro dash cam or something
with
a radar gun or something, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's not over 250. What is the Bugatti Chiron or something? Like, what is the thing? 262 or something? Like, what
the Bugatti
is,
it's Chiron.
Is that the is that
261?
It's 261.
That's the leader in the clubhouse.
Oh, well, that's the Chiron's top speed.
Yeah, I bet they tested it.
I bet that's the highest.
I bet they tested it.
And no one's going to be able to really test it on the street, so they're probably thinking no one's going to be able to call them out.
Yeah. Now, the Koenigsegg is probably going after that. So there's this race for 300 miles an hour. It's like Bugatti, Koenigsegg, Hennessy. These guys are all going after 300
miles an
hour. Sounds
like the race that's going to get there first is Whitey.
That's right.
Those are some pretty white dudes. Koenigsegg is a white dude.
He really is. He's kind of he's like that dude from Powder. White.
Yeah.
That's so funny because at Pebble Beach 2 years ago, I pulled right up next to him in my NSX.
Did you keep going?
And I looked over at him and he said, "Oh, nice NSX." And I was like, "Well, nice your car."
Yeah, and he said it in an evil accent, too.
That's why I drive a Corolla. It doesn't have the prestige of the Koenigsegg.
Yeah, but nobody bothers you.
We get that name thing going. What color's your NSX?
It's a silver. They only made 500 in that color. The first two years, with the black top. Yeah, it's the Pulp Fiction one that the wolf drove in that car.
I love that
you drove a silver one. That's a cool finesse car. It's an aluminum car, right? Aluminum panels.
All monocoque bodied aluminum car to come out.
And it's
It's not inexpensive. If you get a
V6, what about 260 horsepower? 280?
Right around 280. V6 with the VTEC.
Super tweakable, but you don't want to mess with that.
Yeah, but talk about just like a good. It's just a Honda Acura engine. It's like a good start every day run.
Yeah.
I mean, have you had problems with it?
No, yeah. I've had it for about 7 years now. I bought it, luckily, at the lowest point at the buying process. They've gone up, obviously, with the new gens coming out. And I'll track it basically maybe once every year. You know, not trying to abuse it too much, but mm-hmm. it's a beautiful car, and it's one that I also wanted when I was young. So the DeLorean, that. And then my favorite car, though, is a 1990 Acura Legend, which will kind of throw you guys for a loop.
I mean, don't trade the NSX for that, but sure.
That's an incredible car.
Go on a Craigslist and pick one up. You can overpay on one on a bring a trailer if you want.
Those were some cool pieces, but that's a front-wheel drive car, isn't it?
It is, yeah. Mm. That's the only – the Lexuses from that first gen were rear-wheel with the V8, so people kind of tend to go to that. But there's something about that G1 Legend that holds a special place in my heart.
I got a thing with front-wheel drive. It's like, this chick used to do porn, but she's really nice, and she's found Jesus Christ, and she's attractive.
But
and
she still used to do porn, and it's documented.
It's kind of a deal, but I like her. She's sweet and all, but and listen, I'll drive her around a little bit, but I just can't go full time. Yeah. It's a deal breaker. Like, the front wheel drive, just a
it's the porn of powertrains.
It's the porn of powertrains. Oh, jeez.
So wait a minute. It's the Venom is 301.
Yeah.
Wow, that's documented. Hennessy.
Not documented. Not yet. Documented. Not documented yet. They're still working on that.
I'm gonna go with Matt on this. Also knowing Hennessy a little bit, I'll go with that's not documented.
It's not documented. We'll see where it goes.
Hennessy's looking so he's pretty white.
Yeah. He is.
He's not as white as Koenigsegg, but he's pretty white.
Yeah. Okay. But he's Texas white. He's not like evil henchman white.
Is the Koenigsegg, is that 278 documented, or is that what they're shooting for as well? We don't know if the Koenigsegg is that documented or not.
I'm going to say documented on
that.
Koenigsegg.
I'll say documented. Bugatti's at 271, so the Hennessy. It's probably not documented, but we'll see if it is. But he's cool, dude. He picked us up in Detroit, right?
I like him, and he's got a cool project going on. And I think he's a small enough company. He's got some flexibility to go, all right, we went out, we tested it, we hit 290 whatever. I was like, okay, what do we need to do? We need to add more power. We need to up the boost. We need to do something to it. And like, let's go for it. Let's go and get it. I think he could probably get it. I mean, he certainly got the desire to do it.
300 is so much
about batshit nuts.
It's nuts, and it's so much about tire technology and aerodynamics. It's so much about aerodynamics at that point.
So Hennessy's is a claim.
See how you know everything? Yeah, like I've told people looking through the computer all the time, like you're wrong, and like I'm looking at a computer, and I'm like, nah, I know that guy. That's
fake
not
news,
whatever. Yeah, like you know, right? Sorry,
I'm gonna say Koenigsegg's probably documented.
I go documented with Koenigsegg as well.
That one is documented. There's a YouTube video.
Right. So
winner.
This is why I profile everyone all the time. Because when you start profiling people and companies and humans, and like if the Koenigsegg says that, you go, oh, he did that. If John DeLorean said it, or if Elon Musk said it, or whoever, you might go, let me see that. Let me look into that.
I like the way the government says, you can't tweet that out, Elon Musk. You're going to have to pay $5 million. I feel like if you claim your car goes 250 on Twitter and it's not documented, you get a fine. The government needs to fine you. SEC says you're a publicly traded company. You can't make batshit claims on your car going 250 plus.
Well, it's funny. I feel like there's something going on behind the scenes because I feel like he is being given a very long leash by the government.
He does.
You know, in terms of some of these missteps that he's made. And I'm not really sure exactly what the story is behind there, other than maybe they just don't want to be the ones to put the hammer down on somebody that everyone looks at as this visionary that's trying to do the good for all at this stage.
Well, you know, big picture and a little outside of the car realm, there's a new world order in that you take all the big tech companies and all the way to distribute information. And, you know, back in the day, I think the government would say, like, hey, GM or hey, Pepsi, we make the rules. You listen to us and this is what you do. Yeah, but GM and Pepsi can't get you elected. And now you have to take a little different approach toward Google or whatever, Facebook or whatever, it is, you take your hat off before you enter that meeting if you're the government, because these are the guys who are going to get you elected. And let's be careful about how we treat them or how they feel about us. Because if they don't like you, they can start working algorithms and you're going to fall off a cliff.
Yeah.
And so in a weird way, Elon and big tech are starting to be bigger than government, and they're the kid who could wish you into the cornfield,
right,
like from the Twilight Zone.
It's not too big to fail. It's big enough to change the rules.
Right.
Yeah.
The next election is going to be heavily decided by all these big tech entities, and you can already see them sort of taking certain political ideas and voices that they don't like. They're already kind of cleaning house a little bit, and it's going to make an impact. And you better watch the way you address them.
Yeah.
If you're in government, especially when you're Luddite and you don't know anything about technology, like you don't know anything about this world. All you know is this world is going to make or break your next election in your world.
Yeah.
And so approach it with caution.
Oh, I could do another hour just on that alone. and then the government trying to break these companies up and stuff. It's like, I got thoughts on that too. I got a lot of opinions on that.
We'll write them down. We'll bring in on my show. Let me hit JB Weld. For big or small repair projects at home or in the garage, you need something that lasts. We're proud to have JB Weld Epoxy Adhesives as our sponsor. They do everything, and we use these guys for everything. And they use super glue, and they call it super glue.
They call
which
it
I like.
Is it super weld or something?
I don't know. I remember we were talking to them. I was like, "Are you allowed to say super glue?" And they're like, "Yep, we are." So you can keep your JB Weld in your toolbox, kitchen drawer, craft room. Good for metal, wood, plastics, and more. You used to just use it for like muffler repair. Now you can use it for everything. They make everything. Made in the USA. Company's been around for more than 50 years, and it's good for anything that's broken. JB Weld.
High temp stuff, too, I like.
Oh, yeah, they got that, too. It's available at jbweld.com, Home Depot, Lowe's, AutoZone, Advanced Auto Parts, O'Reilly, Walmart. It's Amazon, everywhere. JB Weld. So, Tamir, what do you got? So, I feel like we're kindred spirits here because
we both like making documentaries,
but we both like car related
stuff.
No,
it's more than that. I mean, you're actually the reason why I'm sitting here right now because when I used to be a big fan of Loveline back in my high school days, and in college I did a show similar to Loveline where I was Dr. T. It was Dr. T and Paul's show. I was Dr. T, the board certified doctor of love, and it was a live call-in cable access show in southern Wisconsin. And so I was going to go into the medical field, and then after doing that, my friend encouraged me to come out here to try and go into the entertainment business. And so that's really how it all sort of started. But from a car perspective, I'm a huge car guy, and a lot of the projects I'm working on do revolve around the car space just because I think there's – and as you can see with a lot of these feature films that are coming out, there was a real lull after Tucker. You know, nobody wanted to sort of touch that space. And now you're seeing some of these other car movies come out, like the Ford versus Ferrari and some of these other ones. Yeah. And I think that, people see there's a lot of interesting drama associated with these types of characters behind these films.
Well, we hope, because the way Hollywood works is if two volcano movies come out in the same month and they both tank, it's 50 years before they make another volcano movie.
Yeah.
And then
except Batman. They just keep making Batman movies.
Well, they make one that sucks, and then the next one's good, and then the next one's good. Yeah. And so they figured that – I mean, I don't know if they figured
it
out.
They did make like three Fantastic Four movies, I think. Those all sucked.
I'm saying you pick a theme. Like they made a couple of dragon movies in those tanks. There's like no more dragons, but then Game of Thrones, so maybe there is going to be a dragon movie.
You're right, though. There was a good long beat between the dragon movies and Game of Thrones.
Right. So whenever a car movie comes out, we all have to root for that car movie because those of us who want to make car movies, it's going to rely on that car movie. When I did goddamn American Top Gear for goddamn ABC, I did the pilot, and they had put back on Knight Rider. They did like Knight Rider 2009 or something. Like these idiots put Knight Rider back on, and then Knight Rider tanked. Of course it would tank. It's horrible.
Yeah.
And then the Knight Rider tanked, and we had a great pilot. And then NBC or ABC or whatever is like, oh no, we're not in the car business anymore.
Everybody hates cars now.
Yeah.
Like, people hate a Knight Rider reboot.
What could be more different than Knight Rider? Yes, they both own cars. They're cars. Right, you guys drove cars here today, so you're in the car business too, according to that logic. But we had a great pilot that never saw the light of day because they were failing with Knight Rider, and they just went, no more cars yet. So that can happen. So we should be rooting for Ford v. Ferrari.
Absolutely, yeah. Or Framing John DeLorean.
And Framing John DeLorean.
And Framing John DeLorean and...
And an Airwolf reboot.
The Art of... Driving,
racing
in the Rain, a Dempsey thing coming out soon enough. Anyway, Framing John DeLorean, it's a really great watch. Baldwin's all over it. And it's done in a way that you just haven't seen before. So it's very innovative. And then the character is super fascinating. And I knew something about DeLorean and his automobile, but I did not know nearly as much as I learned after watching Framing John DeLorean in select theaters today, available on VOD as well. And you can shoot him a tweet at Framing DeLorean, and the website, framingjohndeloreanfilm.com. Tamir, we got to talk, man.
Yeah, I'm ready. I've got some projects that I think you're going to be interested in.
My God, I got projects too. I got too many projects. All right. Denver, when is that? Tonight? Yeah, tonight and tomorrow night. The first show is sold out. You got to confirm, Max Pata, but someone told me on the radio today, I think. I think the first show is sold out, but they're pushing for the late show on Saturday, and then there's some tickets on Friday shows as well. So two shows Friday, two shows Saturday, and I'll be doing stand-up, and Adam Carolla's Unprepared over there. Live shows everywhere. Just go to adamcarolla.com and see my special Not Taco Bell material as well. And what do you got? Shift and Steer?
Shift and Steer, check that out. And we did a nice little... Just a little departure on CarCast this week. Earlier, we got into the Undertaker versus Goldberg match and what happened and how Goldberg busted his head open.
Yeah, I saw.
It was very dramatic. There was a lot going on. Didn't go according to plan.
Until next time, Sam Carolla for Tamir Arden and Matt, the moderator, DeAndrea, saying keep the air in the spare and the bag in the wheel.
For the latest updates and call-in times, follow the show on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at CarCast Show. If you'd like to write in, fill out the form on CarCastShow.com. And don't forget to give us a nice rating on iTunes. CarCast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana. For more information, visit CarCastShow.com.